Welcome back to another Drat and Drake, and we are able to get Dr. Cruz back for the third time in a row. Last time, you know, very quickly, we talked, of course, you know, just background with what you've been doing. Last part was we talked about kind of Eastern and Western kind of mentality with mental health. You know, the last one of the things I said were, or that we talked about, is processing your emotions, right? Really being able to feel those, and then going into the logic aspect, then going into thinking, okay, well, what's next? How do I then go forward and actually execute after feeling these emotions, right? Dr. Cruz, do you have anything to add to that before we kind of start jumping back in?
When we feel better, we become smarter.
Okay. Yeah, well said. From there, we kind of then went into a very big mantra that you like to go by is the feel better, think better. And I made a comment where I was like, well, you know, there are these beautiful and meaningful things. Most of those things in life, to acquire them are not easy, right? Or those things that are beautiful are not easy. And it seemed like you have a bit of a disagreement.
I did want to disagree with you. And let me answer this question by actually asking you a question. I know you're not my student anymore, and I know
Sensei.
I know how annoying it is to ask a question and be answered with another question, but I promise you I'm going somewhere with this. When I ask you, why do you think that? You know, you're probably going to give me a quick answer. And then I will say, and why? You give me another answer. And I'll ask you again, why? You know, we start playing this game of toddlers of they ask why after every single sentence we say. We start getting into the root of our thoughts. And basically what we believe are a bunch of thoughts that we have had in our past, and we have repeated them and repeated them over time. We have repeated these thoughts so much that we actually believe that is the truth.
So there's a compounding effect of either thoughts, whether they're internal, external, whether from your upbringing, just years of compounded thoughts and reasons to kind of create this type of toxic reasoning, essentially.
Absolutely. And it's we can call it conditioning. We can say, you know, like Pavlov's the studies on animals, basically training. We basically train ourselves to believe something. And the importance of that is that whatever we believe is what our mind focuses on. And what our mind focuses on is really what we experience. It basically expands. But let me give you a story.
Okay.
It's a true story. One of my favorite clients, she's wonderful. She's now a veterinarian. When I was working with her several years ago, she was a vet student. You know, you've been there.
Yeah, maybe once.
Very, very motivated, eager, just very professional. And one day, she was, I think it was in a party or something, and in the group, somebody said, oh, whenever you get to anesthesia in fifth semester, oh, that is going to be hard. And then somebody else from that group said, oh, yes. And this student started believing that anesthesia was going to be really hard. And I believe she was in second semester at the time.
So four semesters left before she even gets there. Yeah.
Exactly. So those thoughts that she heard, you know, those opinions even from other people, she started believing them. And that means that she started circling in the thought like, oh, what if I cannot pass anesthesia? What if I make it all the way and don't pass that course? What if, right? This repetition of thoughts plus the storytelling that her mind engaged in, it really made her believe that anesthesia was hard. And even though she was telling herself, oh, I really want to pass. I really want to pass. This might be difficult, but I really want to pass. The core emotions that she was feeling was a lot of anxiety, it's a lot of frustration, even a lot of anger. And her training was so effective that she failed the course.
She psyched herself out, essentially.
She completely psyched herself up.
Wow. Yeah, I also can imagine too, when you're going through like your other classes, right? Your second semester, whether you're third in pharmacology. Oh yeah, don't worry. We're gonna go over propofol very quickly, but you'll go through it more in depth in anesthesia. You're like, yes. Oh shoot. And then it just again comes in, and then you meet other people, right? And then your fourth semester, the class before that, you start talking to the people because you're closer to the ones above you. You start seeing people fail anesthesia. You start seeing this, and you start to kind of, you know, doubt yourself. I find it interesting because some people become more motivated when they're told about a challenge, right? Some people are saying, oh, this is going to be tough. You know, I know, and this is probably where people might have thought I maybe came off cocky, but whenever I was told the class was hard, I was like, oh, I'm excited to take this class. Like, I'm ready to see kind of how difficult this is and see how far I can push myself. Obviously, I'm going a little
off
topic here.
That's a great example. No, that's great. This is absolutely on topic, because whenever the students started seeing, as you said, other students failing, that made her mind say, there you go. That's the evidence. It's actually truth. And what happened with this person was that she was not able to see a challenge, to see fear and address it constructively. At least back then.
Yeah.
She's a pro now. She's amazing. Yeah. And what you're saying is that in your life, in your 35 plus years or so, you have been also training without knowing that, you know, whenever something is challenging or is hard, you get excited about it. I completely different than how you were, because for me, a challenge meant I'm out of here. I really don't want to take this on.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. And it's interesting because that is something that like I'm trying to instill in my daughter as well, as she's like, you know, learning of jumping off a platform, like, you know, gaining that self-confidence to do it herself and all that. Yeah. So a lot of it comes down to, I guess, upbringing, of course, or nature versus nurture in that aspect.
Absolutely. And if we wrap up on the story about the students, whenever we started working together, now that she had time, because, you know, she had to repeat the semester, she was able to realize how she trained herself to fail. And whenever she realized that she did this, then all this rush of emotions, of anger, of guilt, of frustration. So what we did is just what we talked in a couple episodes back, is that we want to put the rational mind to the side and just allow those feelings to be felt. Because when the student was able to do this, she went from feeling that anger, then a little more to guilt, then she started to feel sad, and eventually she realized that at the core, it was fear. And then she started saying in her family how much, so many patterns from dad, grandma, and, you know, everybody, they don't know how to deal with fear constructively. So once she had this emotional foundation laid, she was able to say, okay, I am going to retrain myself. And it was basically changing the words and truly feeling that excitement about anesthesia and about that she is going to pass.
Are you seeing that fear and maybe or anxiety, it tends to be the biggest kind of factor in students that fail their classes?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So not so much the intelligence aspect or anything like that, or maybe even possibly study habits, but a lot of it comes down to just that it's themselves. They're kind of in their own way, and it's this mental block of just the emotional feeling that they're not able to get past.
That's exactly what I saw. And that was one of the my main drivers to leave academia and start working in mindset coaching. Because I was seeing these wonderful students, motivated. They were spending hours in the library. They really knew the material. But then when they got to the exam, even just walking to the exam center and feeling also all that environment that a lot of people are stressed and talking about the questions and the answers, and I really don't know this, I have not studied that well. That kicked the stress response so hard that when this very well motivated student that really studied goes to the exam and goes blank.
Yeah.
Or, which is more common, they know the right answer, they click it,
and they go back.
And they go back and they change it.
No, that, I think that's happened to everyone, even myself, a fair number, number of times.
Myself included, so many times for sure.
Yeah, and I guess it's also, you know, you see that obviously in vet students, but in vet med, a lot of the anxiety comes into play too, where there's a lot of social anxiety, right? We talk a lot about how in vet med, you know, a lot of people want to go in obviously with their hearts in the right place. They want to help animals, right? And their brains in the right place, they're brilliant. But then the social aspect, being able to speak, have difficult conversations, whether it's emotional or financial with clients, that tends to be, I think, a big struggle for people and kind of why we start to lose a lot of that kind of that momentum when we first enter into vet med and people start burning out, I think, is primarily those reasons.
I believe you're spot on this, because if you think about other careers, you know, other professions, and compare it to vet medicine, we as vets, we are faced with such emotional intensity in one single day, in hours. You know, for example, you could be doing an emergency, I forgot the word, if it's not a bird thing.
I know, right?
when you remove the...
Pyometra.
That one, yeah, thank you. I was thinking of dystocia.
Oh, yeah, that one too,
you know,
actually.
You're doing an emergency surgery. A few hours later, you're playing with the pups and you're cleaning them and you're getting that wonderful smell of the just little animals. And then in the afternoon, you get to euthanize an animal because it got poisoned or the client doesn't want it anymore and they're expecting you to take it. Right. So the range of emotions that we are exposed in vet medicine, it's enormous. And compared to other professions, ours is very unique.
Yeah.
You go through allowing ourselves to learn how to regulate those emotions.
Okay.
Just feel them.
So I have a question, actually, or actually, if anything, an exercise, if you can help guide some of the listeners and myself. And I'm sure we've all encountered this, right? Whether it's, you know, the hour before the exam, or more recently for veterinarians, is you pull up to the parking lot before your shift and you're in the car in front of your steering wheel and your heart starts to race and you think, oh shoot, okay, my shift's about to start. And you have all these kinds of thoughts entering your brain. You typically anxiety, fear of, do I know enough, or what's about to come? All the things. What are, in that moment where you're sitting, you feel very isolated and you're kind of semi-freaking out or starting to process what shift or what test exam is about to come, what advice do you have for people who are currently in that state?
That's a beautiful question. My advice would be go to the breathing, connect with the breathing. Any type of breathing you can. And if we go like, okay, yeah, sure, great, that's like the most
I'm always thing. Breathing, doctor.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Here's the funny thing. When we are in that mode that you just described, you know, heart is racing, palms are sweaty, pupils are getting dilated, you know, this is the typical sympathetic response, our breathing pattern becomes very fast and very shallow. And we tend to talk faster and we kind of are gasping. And whenever we do this and we escalate this breathing, just because from our thoughts, we are basically training ourselves to have a panic attack later on.
Yeah, sounds about right. Sounds like the panic
attack,
yeah.
Because the breathing pattern, it's starting to reduce the amount of available oxygen into the brain, into many other tissues. So it's like the body goes like, okay, I started with a very small sympathetic response. You're still giving me more things to fire up that response. So here we go, panic attack.
Yeah.
So then if we think about the breath, we're always breathing. Mm-hmm. That's why that's the number one advice that I like to give, just as a suggestion. Yeah. Because once we pay attention to the breathing, then we have a capacity to start bringing the breathing down a more regular levels, more normal. The breathing starts to become deeper. It starts to become slower. And when that is happening, the parasympathetic branch of the autonomic nervous system starts to take over. And as it starts to take over, the sympathetic branch starts to calm down, to reduce.
So in those instances, do you think at that point, obviously, like, you have to take your test and you have to start your shift. You can't now just suddenly start to self-reflect and do, you know, is it, but in that small window, it's probably that time where it's then time to acknowledge, oh, okay, yeah, I'm feeling this way. Breathe. I need to really process how I'm feeling. And I definitely need to prioritize this.
Yes, that will be like this step two. Because think about it, when we are in that sympathetic stress response, blood gets redistributed to different parts of the body. Mm-hmm. So we are not in our normal sense, if you will. We're not thinking that clear. So if I'm about to panic, like I'm panicking, I'm not going to be able to just say, okay, I feel like I am panicking. I believe what I have to do now. No, right? We want to go to the simplest small step that we can take. And that is to breathe. Breathe with intention. After a few breathings, even just 20 seconds, then we go like, oh yeah, I'm kind of freaking out. Yeah, the shift is about to start. This is new people. Oh, I know I have difficult cases today. So then again, when we start with that foundation of something very simple, it's giving ourselves the time for our brain, our mind to really kick in and do its analytical and rational processes.
Okay. Now, you know, you said this to me, outside of the record button, but you've talked a lot about kind of your inner dialogue, right? How you communicate with yourself and the language and all that. Is that something that, you know, I think that's something we should probably talk about, the next episode.
Language patterns are a great foundation to start. And really, if we wrap up this episode, circling back to the story of the student, whenever she was able to realize that her inner dialogue made her get what she didn't want. Then she was able to say, I don't want that anymore. I'm going to start changing the words, the phrases, how I talk to myself. You know what? Those very late night hours that nobody's around, there's nobody to blame. It's all accountability. That is the time that we can train that inner dialogue. And even if we don't believe it yet, saying things as, I will pass. I am confident, I am studying well, I can always learn better, I can have help. You know, turning that inner dialogue is one of the best ways to prepare for the exam. The breathing at the panic attack is like a very quick reset button.
Sure.
But we truly need to make the time to practice beforehand.
Got it.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, okay. Well, wonderful, Doc. I mean, I think thank you so much for the story. Hopefully if the student is listening, she can acknowledge that her success and just the amazing growth that she was able to acquire just in a short period of time. I it sucks to fail, but it seems like that was almost a blessing to be able to then give yourself that time to process, reset, and then now go back into the step to being successful, which from what you're saying, it seems that's the case. So,
and the truth is that this story, I've heard it so many times. In so many different topics. One is small animal medicine, large animal, physio too. Avian and exotics has not popped up as a difficult one. So.
Oh, well, there you go. Let's see. Because it's so easy, right?
It is easy. Yeah. It's just a lot of things. You know, you got birds, you got reptiles, mammals. You have so many different things.
Fair enough.
So I just needed to say a little bit of
that. Got to get that off my
ancient history of birds.
All right. Well, guys, thanks so much for coming and tuning in for this episode. All right. We'll go ahead and catch you guys on the next one. All right. Take care.